On today's show, we're just going to keep talking about Donovan Mitchell, because guess what? He's pretty darn good at basketball. We'll also get you ready for Cavs Suns. That's all coming up today on Locked On Cavs.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
Today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline, where the game starts. I'm Chris Manning. I cover the Cavs and the NBA for places like Fear the Sword and Dime on Uprocks. That man over there is Evan Damrell. He is the proprietor of One Right Down Euclid. Today's show, segment one, we're going to do a little more discussion of the Donovan Mitchell 71-point game. Segment two, we're going to touch on the latest news we have on Cavs injuries, specifically Darius Garland, specifically Ricky Rubio. And segment three, what to watch for in Wednesday night's Cavs Suns game, which is a game that, you know, on paper, maybe you think that's a tough one, but it shapes up pretty nicely for the Cavs to get a home dub if they show up and perform. But Evan, I want to just say that this Mitchell thing, this performance, I feel
it's
like
fraudulent.
Let's start with the actual like news hook of this, which is that the NBA did say that that was a lane violation, which we knew, but it was a lane violation. And I, you know, them's the breaks, I guess. If you're Chicago, you should that's just happens, I guess.
Yeah, it does happen, and I think, let's be frank, folks, that's the human nature in this game, and that's the human element also gives you the element of error, and obviously it's hard to make those calls in high-pressure situations correctly sometimes, and to the chagrin of Bulls fans and probably the folks who cover them.
Or just to, like, the player, they're probably, they
the
see
players
it today,
too.
And they're like,
yeah,
annoyed.
The players,
yeah,
too. Oh, no, across the board, like, that's why I was just kind of processing what I'm saying. Like, I'm sure, yeah, if you're a Chicago or faintly related to the Bulls in any way, shape, or form, like, you're frustrated by these news, but it is what it is. Also, I think like the lane violation itself caused the tie that eventually led to overtime, but the Bulls were kind of on their heels up to that point to begin with too. Who's to say that if they did call a lane violation, something else would have happened, because they did also call several lane violations against Chicago, and Donovan Mitchell attempted a boatload of free throws because of it. So there's a lot of just questionable calls throughout this game. And I think people zeroing in on the last 2 minutes and the fact that Mitchell did commit a lane violation, also that Jared Allen traveled with 12 seconds to go, is also another big one too. So is what it is, but we also can't predict the future. There is probably a multiverse or a different universe out there where they do call the lane violation. Maybe something different happens instead. Maybe Donovan Mitchell does something even more insane. He scores 72 points and he doesn't miss 5 free throws, so he ends up having 77 points at the end of the night or something like that. Who knows?
All I know is that like that's the most points anyone has scored in a game since Kobe, way back when, and when he had his 81.
And, yeah, and it's also worth noting that like it's the second most points produced ever in NBA history, with 99 points created through scoring or assists by Donovan Mitchell. And the only one ahead of him was Wilt Chamberlain when he scored 100 points, and he got 4 points, I believe, off of assists, which I don't know how they actually tracked or took care of those back in the day, but I don't know. It's crazy. This was a monumental historical game, and if you want to break down and get caught up in the minute details of this, I don't know what to tell you. It was fun. I think you should just be like, hey, I got to witness history. And if people think that the NBA is rigging January games, I don't know what to tell you. I'd be more frustrated with the Bulls kind of selling the farm for a pretty mediocre team.
I think where I want to go next instead of some of that is, I went and read like a bunch of the people's comments about this. Jackson Flickinger wrote a good one, if you're the sword. My favorite one, I think, is the one Michael Pina wrote for The Ringer. It's called Donovan Mitchell 71 reminds us why he was worth all those chips. I think the thing that came through in that piece that I found myself thinking this when I was collecting my thoughts for the pod, and I don't think I articulated this very well, is that Donovan Mitchell, if like you were going to make a list of guys, like if you were to come to the year and say, okay, you have to make a list of like 10 guys out of the 430 whatever guys that are in the league right now, how many of them can get to, would have a chance to make 70 points? I think Mitchell is like, would be on that list. He is playing at like an absurd level this year. Like he, Pina had this thing in his column where he noted that Mitchell's effective field goal percentage and step backs this year is 60.5%, which is an insane number. Last year it was 41.9. He's like 44.7% on pull up threes. The only one who's more accurate than him on pull up threes this year is a guy named Steph Curry, perhaps the greatest shooter of all time. He is having just like an absurd season. He is so efficient. He's playing just at like an insane level. And like this is almost like the crowning achievement on what like maybe will go down as his best season. Like this is on track to, I think, be his best season in a two-way sense and an offensive sense. He's been like, he's worth everything. Mm-hmm. And this just, he's one of those guys that I think if you could say, okay, he could pull this off. He's absolutely one of the guys I think you make that short list. He'd be the one that maybe could pull it off. And he did.
Yeah, he absolutely is. I think you can make the case of, for a lot of things with Donovan Mitchell, like in terms of the fact that the Cavs, like Kevin Love joked about it last night, like what did the Cavs spend to go get Donovan Mitchell? It was Lauri Markkanen, Colin Sexton, Ochai Agbaji, and a boatload of future picks. And that trade will probably work out for Utah in the end when the picks and stuff kind of played out, and maybe when the Jazz just kind of pivot and figure out what their next direction is. But the Cavs made the right call. Like, they went and got arguably one of the best players at his position in the league, arguably one of the best players overall in this league, like a top 10 player, I think, the way he's playing this season. And I agree with you. Like, this is his best season up to this point. And it's crazy to see where Donovan, or sorry, not crazy to see, but crazy to perceive the idea that, like, it's only going to probably get better from here for Donovan Mitchell, and just observing it from the outset and just kind of watching it up close, whether it's through covering this team or just being in the arena in general. Like, it's awesome. And also, like, when you just like break down the historical numbers, like Donovan Mitchell was phenomenal for most of, if not his entirety of his career at the Jazz. So for him to kind of have like this next level to begin with, when he's already had such a stellar start to his NBA career, and we're like 6-7 years into his career at this point, like that's nuts. And even more so when you consider the fact that Cleveland's young core is either in their mid-20s or younger at this point, between Mitchell, Garland, Mobley, and Allen. Like, there's only just going to be room for improvement and growth, and it's just going to get better from here, more than likely.
Yeah. I just think it was funny today that they did get drug tested today.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, Robin Lopez and Donovan Mitchell combining for 72 points certainly did that, so...
Yeah, clearly Robin Lopez had an equal weight in all that. All right, we're going to come back after this break. We're going to dive into the latest on some Cavs injuries, specifically Ricky Rubio, who is still listed as out for Wednesday against Phoenix as of right now. But first, want to tell everyone about our friends at Bet Online. Today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis. Get the latest odds and trends for every professional and amateur league out there, from pro football to college bowl season to basketball and the NFL playoffs and so much more. They have it all at BetOnline.net. For instance, the Cavs are currently plus 1,800 to win the NBA title. That's the 10th best odds in the league at this current moment. The Celtics have the best odds at plus 350. The Bucks are second at plus 600, and the Nets are third at plus 750. The Clippers have the best odds of any team in the West right now at plus 950. If you love sports podcasts, you can find those at BetOnline as well. They are always the fastest and easiest way to get your betting info. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more. That's BetOnline. That's where the game starts. All right, back here on the Lockdown Cast podcast, Chris Manning and Evan Damrell. Evan, looking at the injury report for the Wednesday night Cavs Suns game at the 7 p.m. tip. As of right now, here's what the Cavs have on the injury report. Mamadi Diakite is out on a two-way deal, as is Isaiah Mobley. Darius Garland is listed as doubtful with a right thumb sprain. Evan Mobley is questionable with right ankle soreness. We'll see if his status changes, perhaps based on what they say Wednesday morning, or if anything changes between now and then. Ricky Rubio, Dean Wade, Dylan Windler, all still listed as out. To start with Garland, Evan, I think like we'll see what his hand looks like when he comes back. We'll see what the thumb looks like. But obviously just like an unfortunate knock of how this happened. And again, we will just kind of see how he just sort of looks and how it seems like they're going to be very slow about bringing him back, even though he did play through the injury initially. But we'll see.
Thankfully, it doesn't seem like there's serious structural damage or anything like that. Like, no surgery was required. There's, like, no cast or soft cast or anything like that. Like, prior to the Donovan Mitchell extravaganza against the Chicago Bulls, Ricky Rubio was warming up on one end of the floor with Cleveland's assistants. And then on the other side of the floor, Darius Garland was working with other assistants. And I did notice that Garland had medical tape just around his right thumb. According to reports and according to Garland himself, it's pretty swollen the day after. I'm sure it probably hurts like crazy. And I'm sure, like you said, the Cavs probably remember what happened last year. They kind of overused Darius a little bit, overexerted him. His back just became a recurring issue, just the tightness of that. I know the thumb and the back are nowhere near related to each other on the human body, but you want to make sure you're protecting your franchise point guard and you're able to ease him back into things to make sure that he's upright and structurally sound so that when he does come back, he's not just kind of shoved right back down to the injury report and then has to spend more time recovering and things like that, because it's just an exercise of futility and just mismanagement of player safety and also just mismanaging a franchise player that you have. And also, on the other hand, again, like when Garland was out for an extended period with the eye injury, I think having Donovan Mitchell gives you a little bit of that extra cushion and leeway to bring back guys like Garland a little bit more slowly as well, too, just because the team does function pretty well when they're just like, all right, Donovan, we need you to do this one more night like we have asked you several times this season. Go out there and ball out for 35, possibly 40 minutes and just carry us to victory.
So the other, I think, notable news on this injury list is the Ricky Rubio part of this, because he is not going to make his season debut. I think there was some expectation, chatter, based on just what was said, that maybe he was on his way back and was going to play this week. And I think what you now kind of wonder, Evan, if we're looking at this from the outside, and obviously we don't have access or to see Spiro, and like they're not going to, you know, I don't expect JB Bickerstaff to be like a fully transparent guy in this. It's not really his MO when it comes to injury stuff. And that's fine. That's his prerogative. You know, the Cavs are about to go on the road.
It's a competitive advantage in Bickerstaff's eyes.
Okay, sure. But the Cavs are about to go on a little road trip. They're going to go to Denver on Friday. They're going to play in Phoenix on Sunday, January 8th. They're going to go to Utah next week as well. So, like, they have this little road trip coming up. And, like, you wonder if, okay, is he going to make his debut on the road? Or are they going to just hold it back until he is returned and maybe get some more work on in Cleveland? Their next home game after tomorrow, when they play Phoenix, their next five are on the road. That's at Denver, at Phoenix, at Utah, as discussed, then at Portland, at Minnesota. And then they come back with only one day in between to play on a 3 p.m. start time on Martin Luther King Day against the Pelicans, which is like a clear, like, I would chalk that one might be a loss. I'm just saying. And then after that,
Zion's not playing that game for sure.
Yeah, but I mean, just sick. Like from a travel perspective, like you're coming off of a five game road absolutely. Trip. You have one day. You're gonna fly home in the wee hours of Sunday, and then play like 24 hours later. You're probably gonna be like just cooked. Absolutely cooked. And then after that, after you play that one home game, you're on the road that same week to play at Memphis, which isn't a long trip. And then you have two games at home. So, like, is this pushed back? Like, I just wonder what this means. If he was maybe going to play here, do they wait until they're at home again? Does he debut on the road? Like, I'm just kind of curious about what this sort of maybe signifies for Rubio.
So I asked JB Bickerstaff about this pretty point blank prior to the game against the Bulls, and I said, is there any remaining hurdles for Ricky to clear in terms of just coming back to the floor? And JB kind of said, like, listen, I don't want to put a hard timeline on there just because things change constantly, but there is a plan set in place between Ricky Rubio, Cleveland's coaching staff, Cleveland's front office, and Cleveland's medical team. And they're going to do obviously what is best and what is right by Rubio to make sure that, much like Garland, when he comes back to the floor, that they aren't setting him up for failure and that he doesn't aggravate any injuries, or, you know, they don't rush him back in any sense of the word. I do think it's interesting to note that when Cleveland kind of went on that pseudo road trip when they beat Chicago before they came home against Chicago again, I asked Bickerstaff if Rubio was staying home to practice with the Charge, who were home before they head out on a road trip of their own after the new year. And he said, no, Ricky's traveling with us. So I wondered if that was maybe like a sign, like, okay, he's not doing 5-on-5 stuff with the Charge at this point. He might be doing some more physical contact with the Cavs, but I'm not surprised he's not playing against Phoenix, because, again, they just wanted to ease him in. But back to what I was talking about, though, is like Bickerstaff did say, and I believe Danny Cunningham, friend of the program, Danny Cunningham, and other media members who were in attendance for that practice availability, said that, like, Bickerstaff said the hopeful target was the first week of January, and hey, that could be Friday against Denver if that's the case. It could also be Sunday against Phoenix again as well, if you want to be technical on how weeks work, and if you think weeks start on a Monday or something like that too. So we'll see what happens. I'm not surprised. Maybe if you're a Cavs fan, you're a little disappointed or frustrated, but it's probably the best thing possible to make sure Rubio is just 100%, because again, this is the second time he's torn his ACL. He is entering his mid-30s, and he will never play, according to Bickerstaff, at least 30 to 35 minutes a night again, and maybe you'll see burst of, or maybe a ghost in the shell of what Rubio once was last season, but the Cavs just want to get some guard support behind Mitchell and Garland, and obviously that's going to come with Rubio, and it's going to add some roster and lineup creativity, but just make sure you do it right, and maybe against the Suns isn't the way you want to do it, just because maybe you're throwing him a bit into the wolves, even if Phoenix is missing Devin Booker.
I don't even think it's like a wolves, kind of a to the wolves thing. I think this just makes me, I think like I've tried to view this Rubio thing through the prism from the get-go of that this is not just like a one-year thing for Rubio. They went out of their way to kind of leak that out. It's a multi-year contract, even if the last year has like a partial guarantee. And like, you know, you can never guarantee that anyone's going to be anywhere in the NBA for like a long time. It's just not how this, how that the business of the NBA works. That's, there's player movement and guys can get flipped.
Mm-hmm.
When I just think about this Rubio thing, I just wonder if this, like, it leads to questions just about like, okay, what does he look like when he comes back? How, has there been some hiccups? Is it super cautious? Is this just a long game thing? And, you know, like there's just a lot of like questions that are hard to get answers to about some of this stuff. And that's fine. That's the reality, I think, of trying to do reporting and trying to talk to people about stuff. It's just I think back to media day when Rubio's like, you know, maybe I'll be back in November and maybe I'll be back in March. Like, he's just like, I don't know. And we're over a year. It is the second ACL. And this is just like a very complicated situation for a player that was so important to this team last year that I think is a basketball savant. And that I think is going to have this team kind of has like a need for Ricky Rubio, I think. Mm-hmm. Like Ricky Rubio did last year, they need him. And like, it's like they're kind of, it's kind of screaming for someone like him to help fix some of the issues that I think that have popped up. And I'm curious, we're in like a holding pattern with this. And I think if you're Bickerstaff, you're probably annoyed, because if you want to implement, you want the most time possible to get Ricky Rubio ramped up to make an impact in April and maybe into May. That is what you want. And the longer you wait, and the how that goes, it makes that process harder. Every game like that kind of does matter, and it's more important that he's healthy. But that's I'm sure that's pinging around in his mind right now.
Oh, absolutely, and I think it's also tougher if you're the Cavs, because you're on the road so much for 2023, especially to the beginning of 2023, that practice opportunities are few and far between now and the end of the season as well, to maybe get Rubio a little bit more acclimated. And I agree, like the Cavs do need a little bit of just like that juice Rubio provides. It's just like that spark, because like you said, he's a very cerebral savant like player in that sense. But I also think like just him kind of making Kevin Love a little bit more steady when Love is back to the bench, when Evan Mobley eventually returns, or maybe getting Jetty Osmond on a little bit more of a consistent flow like Osmond was on the beginning of the season, like that's going to do a lot for Cleveland. And maybe I wouldn't say 100% mitigate a lot of the needs they have on this roster, but at least patches up some of the flaws that Cleveland currently has on this roster in terms of just like wing depth and just more importantly, 3-point shooting, because it makes this team a lot more functional. But we'll see how it goes. I'm looking at Phoenix as like, obviously like Jay Crowder will not play for them. Cam Johnson's out. Devin Booker's out. Those are the three players out for the Suns tomorrow. Maybe just with how the Suns are, like they are a middle of the pack team defensively in terms of defensive rating, but they do play physically. They do have a lot of cagey and strong like perimeter defenders. Maybe this wasn't the best matchup to bring Rubio back, but all signs seem to indicate that like Rubio has cleared enough of the benchmarks to come back. Now it's just kind of figuring out the timing of it all to make sure that they are not setting him up for failure when he goes back out there.
Yes. All right. One more break. We're going to come back. We're going to dive into Cavs Suns. Takes place Wednesday night in Cleveland. More on that game, their full preview of that game, right after this. Okay, back here on the Locked On Cavs podcast, Chris Manning and Evan Damrell. Okay, so right now, I do not believe that we have a lineup. I'm going to double check that from our friends at BetOnline. But Evan, here's where I stand with this game. This is a very winnable game. The Suns are not the peak Suns at this current moment. They are not Correct. The team that was humming at the start of the year. Devin Booker is out with injury. They've lost three in a row. They're 4-6 in their last 10. In the last 2 weeks, according to Cleaning the Glass, they're 26th in point differential. They're 22nd in offense with a below average offensive rate. And they are 27th in defense. There's no Cam Johnson. There's obviously no Jay Crowder. Again, there's no Devin Booker, who's the engine of everything they do. You have to deal with Ayton. You have Mikal Bridges. And maybe this is a Chris Paul is on game, but Chris Paul like hasn't been able to kind of be the best version of Chris Paul this year. That this is maybe the year that Father Time has kept him from being like point guard night in and night out in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. This is still a game you got to show up, take care of business. That's just the reality of the league. But this is a game that you should be saying, okay, we look at this, even though we're down some guys, we got to try to take advantage of this one and pick up a dub.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I don't see a line anywhere, whether it's from BetOnline or anywhere else. But folks, sports betting is now legal in Ohio, and Locked On has the perfect show to help you and seasoned gamblers. Download and subscribe to Locked On Bets or daily picks and analysis wherever you get your podcast. But back to the show, and I agree. Like, this is interesting. Like, the Suns are, I wouldn't say the most disappointing team this season, but they are kind of flat, just all things considered. Like, golly, when we go all the way back to the preseason picks, I believe I had Boston and Phoenix in the finals this year. I can't even remember what my pick was, but I feel good about the Eastern pick. But I was pretty high on what the Suns were. And yeah, I agree. Like, Devin Booker is the offensive engine. He does so much for the Suns team, just everyone on the floor, especially just the shooting he provides. And I think he complements Chris Paul so well because, like you said, Father Time it's been catching up to Chris Paul for a while. Like, you can't ask him to be the offensive engine for you and let him do all the scoring or shoulder the scoring alone, like make him handle all the playmaking duties as well and trying to get everybody involved. Like, I think the Suns are an interesting matchup for Cleveland. Like, if there's no Evan Mobley and no Darius Garland, this is certainly a lot more interesting of a matchup because, like, the starting five for Phoenix right now, I believe, is Chris Paul. I know Torrey Craig is starting for them. I know Mikal Bridges is starting for them. DeAndre Ayton as well. I forget who's starting at the 2-8. I believe it's Campaign right now, but I could be wrong as well. But the Suns just have a lot of interesting players all throughout their roster that this could be a little bit of an interesting stylistic matchup for the Cavs. And I wonder how J.B. Bickerstaff kind of adjusts to some of what Phoenix may throw at them, even if, like, you look at how the Suns just got mollywopped by the Knicks on Sunday. But you can't focus on what happened in the past. You have to be present once in front of you. And like you said, something could happen. Something could change. But I don't know. This feels like a winnable game for Cleveland, but also it could be a bit of a challenge depending on who is available on the Cavs side of things.
I think it's absolutely just a game that you, like, you don't have Devin Booker to deal with. So, like, unless Chris Paul is just going to, like, have, like, a Chris Paul game that he just hasn't had with any regularity this year, like, you're the juice that you have to deal with is a little bit less. And, like, if you have Jared Allen and maybe you get Evan Mobley back and you have Robin Lopez to have fouls and be a body for 12-15 minutes, like, I think you should feel pretty good about dealing with Ayton. I'm curious. If there's questions, it's like, okay, like, how much gas is in the tank for them coming off of an overtime game and Mitchell just dropped 71 and said he was cramping the last minute and a half? Like, how recovered and energized is this team coming off of that? Like, even not, and then not just from that physical perspective, Evan, but like an emotional perspective. Like, you just put, yeah. That is one of the craziest, like, energized regular season games I have attended and covered in my life. I have never seen a regular season game where, like, a lot of the crowd stayed for the post-game interview. I have not seen a game where all the players were just sort of, like, in that way to some degree, just so juiced and like, giving so much, right? And you played in overtime. And, like, so what is the energy level just like for Cleveland coming off of that from all its facets? Like, that, if I'm like J.B. Bickerstaff, that's maybe the thing I'm most concerned about. It's just like, what is the energy level like coming off of Monday?
Yeah, I joked about this on the show. I joked about this a little bit on my recap review of the sort, but it really is like it's emotional fatigue that the Cavs might be dealing with. Like, emotionally, like, this game is sensational. Like, you go back and watch the clips after the fact, like, just friend of the program, not on the air but off the air, Jimmy Longo, like, just seeing all the different photos from the reaction of the team just like dousing Mitchell in water and just like the celebration in the locker room and like on the on-court celebrations, everything in between. Like, this Cavs team was juiced and amped because, again, like, they did not seem like a winnable game at halftime against Chicago, and like, it was just an insurmountable Herculean effort from Mitchell, and like, there's going to be a little bit of a drain there's gonna be a little bit of a sink, and it's gonna be tough to, like, I don't care what you say. Like, the Cavs can say, like, oh, no, we're professionals. That's part of being the NBA, blah, blah, blah. Like, we have to be ready on a nightly basis no matter what. Like, anyone says that if you're a professional athlete or a professional coach or anything at any level, actually, not just professional, but there is an emotional drain that comes with this. And I am actually now very curious to see, like, how do the Cavs look when they come out? Do they come out super flat just because they're like, whew, we have to do this again? And like, Donovan Mitchell might be a little gassed too, because he played nearly 50 minutes against Chicago on Monday night. Like, there's a lot of interesting stuff just to kind of watch and monitor with, again, this is a winnable game against the Suns, but there is a little bit just kind of on the mental battlefield that the Cavs might be dealing with.
Any matchups in this game you're kind of most intrigued by? Like, I would have had some Mobley ones if he was going to play, and we'll see if he's going to play. But I think it's, for me, it's probably just, you know, what does, I kind of want to see Okoro defend Chris Paul and the grifting styles of Chris Paul and drawing fouls. And I kind of want to watch that, and I want to watch Ayton and Allen. But does anything else stand out to you?
I mean, I like Mikal Bridges a lot as a player, and I like Torrey Craig a lot too. I think as a starter, he's not functional, but like, the Suns do have some interesting enough pieces where they could press some buttons on the perimeter to make Mitchell or Jetty Osman or even Hollow Neto if he gets minutes, or Darius Garland if he plays as well, like, make them a little bit uncomfortable and maybe ruffle their feathers. And the Suns kind of play into the fact there's a bit of an emotional drain for the Cavs at the end of the day too. But like you said, if there's no Mobley, it does change the dichotomy a little bit for this one. But matchup wise, I'm just more so curious to see, if there is no Darius Garland, how do the Suns defend Donovan Mitchell? Because Donovan Mitchell, his motor runs just so incredibly hot. I would imagine, like, maybe it's cool to start, but it's going to heat up at some point if you're just consistently asking him to do everything for you on offense. And I'm very curious to see how the Suns defend him. Do they throw Bridges at him, or do they put, like, Torrey Craig on him, or do they just keep it honest and throw Chris Paul on him and make it, like, that kind of matchup? Because, like, yeah, Chris Paul's a step slow on offense, but he's still very good defensively at the end of the day. And then the interior battle between Ayton and Allen will be fun too. Like, I think that'll just be interesting to see as well, just because those are two young, kind of fairly similar skill set wise big men. And I think, like, yeah, Ayton has a bit of a higher ceiling than Allen at the end of the day, but it should be a fun matchup just defensively and offensively between those two as well.
Yes, all right, we're going to wrap it up there. This has been Locked On Cavs for Wednesday, January 4th. I'm Chris Manning, that's Evan Damrell. We will be back tomorrow to look ahead, to look back at Cavs Suns, which is Wednesday night in Cleveland. We'll have a full recap up of that game in this feed on YouTube, on your podcast platform of choice after that. Thanks again for making us your first listen every day. This episode was produced by Jake Stevens. Now make your second listen Game to Game NBA. Every moment, every top performance, every result. Locked On Game to Game covers every game from across the NBA with local analysis only Locked On can deliver. You can follow Game to Game on Locked On NBA, available on the Odyssey Hub YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. Thanks again to Jake Stevens for the production magic. Back tomorrow. Peace out. Talk to you soon.